the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, we're big Stacey Jacks. I'm Tom Alricky on the board. S&P futures were down a little bit this morning. We had an up day yesterday. We're only down 10 in the S&P. We're down 59 in the NASDAQ. This is after a day of yesterday. We had a bounce back day. S&Ps were up 67 and the NASDAQ was up 268 after a crummy week last week. But we're... bouncing back, well, we bounced back yesterday. We're bouncing the other way a little bit today. So oil's back up to, we decided that maybe oil is straight. Everything's not going well over in the Middle East, even though, you know, we think we are. Oil's back up 285 to 98.35. Brent is 103.10, so Brent's well over 100. But we have, I'm shocked that the Trump's handpicked, whatever you want to call it, board at the Kennedy Center has unanimously approved shutting it down for 2 years. I'm stunned at this. I mean, a board that is a rubber stamp, I can't even go there. But anyway, that's where that all is. We have Professor Carl.
Oh, you do.
What's going on?
Come on, Chief. You know, there's always a manufactured area of outrage that is fantastic at actually taking your eye off.
Without a doubt. I mean, this guy's good at that.
He might be superb at it, actually. Oh, he's superb at it. Yes, he's the one that set up Learing Centers in Minnesota, and then when the Learing Centers did not steal enough money, this metastasized out into California, which by the way, one of the mainstream media, which I decry on a regular basis because they're usually clowns and worthless, actually dug into it, and the way they found it was, gee, we got all these people that are harvesting, literally harvesting people's Medicare ID numbers.
Yeah, well,
and oh, by the way, what were they doing with them? They were then claiming that these people were on hospice. When they're not. And the only reason this got into the mainstream press is that you've got someone who goes to the regular doctor and says, hey, doc, they're on Medicare. The doc goes and files the paperwork with Medicare. Medicare comes back and denies it and says, we're not paying for that. You're dead. Nearly.
Yeah.
and of course the person's like, oh, wait a minute, no, I'm not. And so this then gets unraveled. Okay, now this is only starting to unravel, but California appears to be the nexus of this thing, and this particular one is especially amusing because there is a set of businesses out there that you pay to learn how to set up this scam.
Well, it's got to be education.
Well, yeah, they charge money for it too.
Well, so if everybody, right, now it's got to be a class in carjacking somewhere.
Well, yeah, I suppose, right? So I mean, you think carjacking is kind of simple, right? Not that.
No, not to do it right. Nothing's as simple as that.
Give me your car.
Oh no, you gotta select the person.
Then you
got to make sure you check the license number to make sure the guy doesn't have concealed carry. All kinds of stuff you
got
to do.
Well, that's true. Yeah, if he's got a gun, you got a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So
there's nothing as easy. And why does everybody think everybody else's job is easy? You think being a burglar is easy?
Well, okay. So, by the way, what I have argued since this Leering Center stuff started in Minnesota is that this is not just a group of people, organized or otherwise, organized criminal activity or otherwise, robbing the government. That the government is actively involved, and they are that both the state and the federal levels, your representatives, your governor specifically, along with all the rest of them, is absolutely, personally, specifically.
I'm never supposed to agree with you, but I will say that when something goes under your nose, even if you're dumb enough to not be part of the take, if you are the part time gangster like Nucky tried to be in Boardwalk Empire, if you see it going on in front of your face and you're in charge of watching for it, you are part of it. I agree with you on that.
Yep, you are absolutely responsible for it, and you are part of it.
So the $220 million spent for her commercial, when you made movies in the last couple of years for less than that, what does that mean at the top?
Well, yeah, hello. Now, here's the best part of this that we've now found, okay? Now, I've got some people on my system that have kind of made a mission out of this, and a couple of them smelled this thing called Qui-Tam. You know what that one is, right?
No, these things are running by me so fast. Okay,
so Qui-Tam is a law. It's a statute. And it says that if you as a citizen develop the evidentiary proof, you can sue.
What do you sound like, Barney Fife, citizen arrest?
You can sue on behalf of the government. The government may join this suit if they so choose, and if they do, you are entitled to a substantial chunk of what gets recovered. If the government declines, you get all of it if you win. Okay, but obviously, if you find something that is monstrous, the government's not going to let you keep it all. They're gonna get.
Kyle, you're so passionate about this, and I love it. But it makes it so easy to tease you. If the idea of a tree falls in the forest and nobody heard it, did it really fall? If there's a law and nobody ever read it, is it really a law?
Well, okay, so Qui-Tam is a real thing. Okay, it's not a joke. It's a real deal.
Okay.
Now, here's the cute part of this. This is what's been developed, and this is why this is absolutely an organized criminal enterprise within the state governments, not just within the crooks that appear to be doing it initially. And here's the reason. It has been found that when this Leering Center stuff started, and along with the Medicaid scams out of Minnesota, largely centered in the Somali community. However, the ringleaders were not Somalis.
Imagine that.
The people who came up with the scheme were not Somalis. So the Somalis are kind of the gangbangers on the street corner. They're dealing the drugs, but they're not the supply of the drugs. Okay.
Wait a minute. I thought it was all the Venezuelans in the boats. We just got rid of those. Everything would be okay.
Well, you know, we blew up some of those. Yeah. But you know, again, we have to distract from the fact that the government is actively involved in this. Okay. Now here's how. Now here is why I think.
So this is the same thing as me saying, find out where the biggest margin is in the chain, and that's what you got to go for?
Okay, so Chief, let me tell you why I think this these guys that are chasing us, I think they've actually got something here, and someone's going to get a bunch of money. So what's been found is they took the merge, basically the join merge, of the Medicaid data that DOJ released, along with another publicly available database, which is the MPI numbers, basically the payment ID numbers of the entities that are getting the payments, okay, that are doing the billing. All right. Now, here's where it gets fun. When the heat started to show up in Minnesota, the state of Minnesota panicked and blackballed a bunch of these providers that were on Medicaid. All right. Which they should have. Go figure,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what did they do? Did they go away? No, they didn't go away. They applied for new MPI numbers, this time centered in Jacksonville, Florida. Okay, nice red state, right? So, well, you know, anywhere that says that this is all blue. Now, here's the thing. Here's how we know that they applied for new numbers and moved the scam down there. Not only are the billing amounts and the procedure codes, the CPTs, identical, okay? That's key number one. Here's the best part. When you apply for this, you have to have a contact phone number. They didn't even change the freaking phone numbers.
Okay, they're so now bold that, because the people after them are so lame.
Chief, point here being, these guys, the same people, okay? The government has a blackball on the original one, and yet they approved and issued the second number with the same phone number.
I don't know, why does every level of anything, I used to get, they stopped doing this to me for some reason. They must have figured after 100 calls that I wasn't going to buy anything. I would get a call about warranty in my truck.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And I would hit the, get me off the list button.
Yeah, that don't work.
Well, the number would be a 414 area code. Right. The next day I'd get the same call from a 217. Evidently, you only can cancel it in your state or something, but then they can call you from another state. Well, after like 50 calls, 50 states, they finally gave up. But nobody, I guess my question is when you don't, if you tell your kid every day, hey, look, when you're in class, turn your phone off. And the kid shows up and every kid in the class is hacking around on his phone during class, what's right. The real law?
Right. There isn't one.
Yeah, I mean, if there's not some sort of a coordination through family, you know, a lot of religion in there, or maybe not, family, religion, school, something, if there isn't some consistent application, this is the way for people to live together, they're supposed to behave. I mean, all this stuff, I mean, you know, and Lou, he does it more articulately than I do, but I'm not telling you anything. He said if you had a bunch of people that ran around and hunted for a living, for lack of a better term, didn't have domestic animals, didn't decide to live together, where you all of a sudden needed rules, say, okay, if we're all going to live together, this is how we're all going to behave, or else it's going to be chaos.
Right.
You know, we now are living together with those rules not applying anymore in a very large situation. Not that every neighborhood's a cesspool, it's not. And I know when people on a block, they pretty much take care of their kids, pretty much, depending on the neighborhood. I mean, we've gone way away from that. And when you look at the people that are supposed to be in charge, and you look at even the Senate race here, we have three people running. The last week is turned so incredibly negative that I know that politics is a bare knuckle thing. I mean, I get that.
Well, yeah, hello.
But I mean, every single one of the three people running, Robin Kelly, Stratton, and Raja, has turned, I don't know who was first, and I don't know if it makes any difference. Every single one of them now is accusing the other of taking Trump's PAC money, this. And I would like to see, I don't know if I want everybody paddled or I want everybody jailed, but I would just like to see somebody somewhere say, okay, here's this guy's commercials, here's these two ladies' commercials. This one is absolutely somewhat correct because somebody took money from, you know, the same person who's bidding on the Kennedy Center or something like that. But these other two are just flat-ass wrong. They're absolutely lies. You shouldn't be able to do that. Now, if the population is dumb enough to elect the person who does that and doesn't sit there and go, wait a minute, the guy just told me something. He's lying to me right now. How can I trust him in office? How can I trust him to be a senator, for God's sake, or her?
Well, yeah.
I mean, but if somewhere, someplace, there needs to be some kind of filter like this, and I'm not detecting one at all. And the guy we have at the top, even if you're very Republican and you can't stand the Democrats, which I certainly can understand, the scoundrel in chief does not help us with this. I mean,
well, yeah.
I mean, it absolutely does not help us with this. I mean, the lies about the Kennedy Center. How much did they pay for this detention center? Doesn't anybody ask any questions about why we have detention centers come up for 92,000 people? What are we doing, round up everybody that votes the wrong way? I mean, what are we doing here? The place, was it Atlanta? How much did they pay for that place after it's been listed for 2 years and the guy couldn't sell it or something?
Well,
this is insane.
Well, you're right, Chief. However,
I know that if you look for a second, the Democrats are involved in some, but that's not the point. The point is nobody should be doing it.
No. The point is that if you're gonna clean up a sewer, okay, the first place you clean up the sewer is where the largest area of pollution is coming from.
You clean it up at the top, when it's people.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah.
Okay. Is if you're going to do this, and that's, you know, that's that you have any intent of doing it at all. Now, here's the problem that we have within our current economic environment. Everybody that we are, you know, now, no, oh, by the way, these Medicare and Medicaid are supposedly audited, right?
But yeah, let's put it this way. Our internal audit system is weak. is that a fair assessment?
Okay. How about the auditors are part of the scam?
Well, here's what I don't know.
That's not weak.
I okay, understand
that's
that.
Not, there's a difference.
But it comes down to people, Carl.
I get that, but here's the thing. When I look at this and I just do a straight extrapolation. Okay, that's all I'm doing here. All right, just a mathematical extrapolation. What's been uncovered, the size of the program in which it was found. Okay. Then you extrapolate that to similar programs within the government funding matrix. Right? That's all you do. So we haven't even gone to designing a armed conflict that uses $1 million missiles to shoot at $20,000 drones. Okay, on purpose. We haven't even gone there yet. We're just looking in this one place.
Chief, give me 1 second. What I'm saying is nobody's going to disagree with you on any of this stuff.
Okay, here's the issue from my point of view, and this ought to be the issue from everyone who's listening's point of view. All right, a simple extrapolation. You can only defend this based upon that, because until you go actually do a real audit and come up and have real numbers, that's all you got. Okay, you have the fraud you know is occurring, and you have the amount of it. And so then all you've got there is the extrapolation. From that extrapolation, at least half of the increase in your cost of living in real terms since the crazy started in 2020. So this is 6 years now. At least half of that is directly from this.
I don't disagree.
Here's the thing. You explain to me why it is that we don't have people literally in the street demanding that this not just come back, be taken back from the people who stole it, which, duh, right, but that the people who deliberately let it go on, which means your governor, pretty much everybody else's governor, Waltz. Now we got DeSantis because, hey, they transport themselves there. We got Newsom out in California. We got all these, and I'm willing to bet that the list of governors that aren't actively involved in this is probably fits on the fingers of one hand. Okay, so, I mean, whether you're red or blue.
Or they could just be oblivious.
No. You're deliberate. Listen, deliberate blindness
you
is
could
not
possibly,
the same
You could possibly be dumb enough.
Jasmine Crockett hires a guy who likes to steal guns and says he's a cop and he really isn't.
The only thing we're jousting about.
The problem with this, Chief, is that if you're in a position of trust and that is that is your defense, you're still guilty.
I don't disagree with. I think the two of us could go anywhere in government and find.
How about if we just drag these people out of office by their
okay,
hair?
I think, and this is where I'm coming from here, Carl. Somehow or another, government has become a reflection of who we are. Name me one kid who messes up in school that ever gets suspended or paddled or the eraser bonks off his head. You don't do that anymore. Which is fine with me. I kind of thought that stuff was kind of weird. But the fact is, we've replaced it with nothing. We replaced it with no consequences whatsoever. Now, if we went from bad consequences to more positive ones, I'm all for it. But you can't replace them with none. You know, which we have. I mean, there's no consequences basically for whether you're an out and out crook or you're just a bad kid or you're a bad person. But you look at the history of the World War II stuff. Everybody in this country couldn't wait. I mean, people, everybody's family, people are dying. Now it's only volunteer people that die. But in those days, people are dying. My uncle died in the war. My dad died after the war from melanoma. He got in the war. So this, you know, and everybody was willing to do anything to win this as fast as they possibly could. Yet you had in Washington, and it came from the top, you had a guy named Harry Truman, who was a tough SOB from Missouri, and you couldn't push around. And he was in charge of some Senate committee on, was it like waste and something? These guys held, every bid that went out for these guys would jump all over it, and they would review it and audit it. They essentially were the internal audit. They came from the Senate. They came from Congress, which now has zero balls. So Harry Truman headed this committee, and the generals hated him. They said, wait a minute, we're in a war. If we need a PT boat engine, I don't give a crap how much somebody spends for it. And Truman says, well, you might, but I do, type of thing. The problem was, when the generals went to George Marshall and complained, George Marshall says, we're fighting for democracy. That's how democracy works. Live with it and don't cheat. So it came from Marshall. And the reason why it came from Marshall is Roosevelt told Marshall, that's the way I want it to work. You take care. You behave for these guys. So it came right down from Roosevelt to Marshall.
From the top.
Which allowed Truman to... What if Marshall didn't give a crap and Roosevelt said, he's just a congressman, screw him, I'll run bad ads against him or something tomorrow. What kind of chaos... If it doesn't come all the way through, it doesn't work. How long could we be on the air talking about outrages in the system that we saw the last week? I mean, really?
Yeah.
You can name it on one and the other. I'm going to have a little get together tomorrow with my guys that still remember Judge Tooman, and we get together every couple of months. Tooman was a terrific guy, and he passed a couple of years ago. But the people used to get together every week just to hang with Judge Tooman. We still get together. Every single person there, if you corner them over a beer and they don't think you're going to blab, you'll get a story about a murder or something that they knew who the person was, because of client privilege and all kinds of stuff. They couldn't say anything, and they couldn't believe how screwed up the police were either, and not trying hard enough, not having the resources. The easiest cases in the world just wander away nobody's there to check anybody's fingerprints. Nobody does any. That's why I stopped watching all the cop shows on TV. They are so out there. None of that stuff happens unless somebody cares about gets shot.
Well, it's total crap unless that's the case.
So, I mean, you don't have to go very far. All you have to do is open your ears to find out. I mean, me coming home on the expressway Sunday night. The guy bangs his van into the thing, and he's walking down the expressway. Does that mean there's no license plates? Is it stolen? For God's sake, how do you just walk away from the thing in a pouring rain and say, I don't care?
Oh, screw it. Yeah, exactly.
how do you do that? So the guy comes up with the tow truck and he goes, where do I take it? Who owns it? We don't know. The guy left.
We don't know. He left.
All you have to do is keep your eyes open in the city. It's 10 times a day.
But, Chief, this is the stuff. You know, the thing is that there's always, you know, it's like people, you know, we're talking about all the, oh, you know, this, this, uh,
the government is, you know, there's this scam that's going on with, you know, with elections and this and that. There is always a scam. There's always fraud. In every, I mean, you know,
and people applaud it though. You and I are the only ones just saying. Everybody else is applaud. Look what he got away with. That could have been. Why wasn't that me,
Chief? It's not. No. The thing is, it's gotten into the organs of the state government as well as the federal. And the reason is because if I steal $1 million billing hospice services to someone who's not actually dying. Okay.
Well, everybody is dying to a certain extent.
Well, eventually, right. Right. So, I mean, you know, yeah, you start dying the day you're born. But if I steal those services, that goes into GDP.
Oh, yeah.
Because I spend the money. All right? So it goes into GDP. So the government wants this.
Well, they love the GDP number.
Well, absolutely. And oh, by the way, you get it in your grocery bill.
Well, if somebody is on their last leg and the family brings them home, you might have somebody help you for the 24 hours. That's not much in the GDP. If you have some huge hospice deal, there's a lot of money there.
No, Chief. You got to realize how this is what's going on here. These guys are it's $1,000 at a time.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's 5 million of them. What they found out in California looks like over close to 100 billion.
Well, every time that I see that happening here, somebody comes home and they want the person to pass it home. The family pays for the person to come help out.
My parents. Both went in their own house. Okay? Personal experience with this stuff. All I'm pointing out is that this is...
Hey, if you see Joel pop up, let me know.
I don't see him yet. But here's the point I'm making here is that... What GDP?
Oh, yeah. It's... But I guess my... How do you stop it? And I'm saying
how do you stop it is you start being extraordinarily aggressive.
Okay, but who is the you? If the person on the top is the biggest stealer, do you expect...
Well, you know what? The people are going to have to decide they've had enough of this and they're going to have to put the marker on the table that this crap stops and it gets recovered, so your cost of living goes down, which, by the way, means asset prices are going to go down, which... you can't have that. Your clients would hate that.
My clients wouldn't bother them so much because we got them protected.
Well, yeah, okay, you got some puts.
Yeah.
You know, but most people's clients would hate that, right?
Right.
All right. So, you know, hey, all of a sudden, oh, crap, you know, this isn't 10%, it's 50%. The cost of houses, I bet Aud wouldn't like it very much. But,
no.
No, I bet she wouldn't like it at all. But here's the thing.
Although, I'll tell you what, if they went down to where regular people could afford them,
well, would you like to have a next generation and some families? Because if we don't solve this, that ain't going to happen.
Hey, we'll probably get Joel in a second, but I have a quick question for you on the housing stuff. The weird part of the housing thing, I think it's way worse than advertised. I mean, you know, you and I can talk about here's the average wage people make, here's the average house. You know, right. By the way, the average person can't afford the average house, which is like 2007, to me, only like 40% worse. But the weird part is you have all kinds of people talking about housing prices and so forth, and we need more construction because of the laws of supply and demand. Well, first of all, I happen to know a lot about the laws of supply and demand, and these people don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Just a little bit, right?
Yeah, but those people don't know what the hell they're talking about. Because is the idea... Yes, if all of a sudden 1 million houses hit the market, and especially in an area of, wherever, you know, say everybody in Meta lives in the same town, and 16,000 people get laid off, yes, supply and demand will work in the sense that those houses are going to drop in price dramatically. If everybody gets a job some other place, they all got to leave, right? Who are you going to sell it to? I get that part. But if the tariffs or whatever it is, or just... CPI or the things that apply to lumber, which of course CPI probably doesn't, is there's a lumber line there somewhere, but if the replacement value of the house, even at the 400 grand number that it is now, is 500, building more houses doesn't help you because they're going to cost 500.
Right.
And right now, the part we're missing on this is, I mean, you know, Audrey will sell houses, and even the ones that maybe need some work, very few of them are selling for over the replacement value.
Yeah, oh no, I know. But see, the thing is that, again, why is the replacement value that high? And the answer is because you've driven up the cost of the supplies
yes,
to build.
Yes, without a doubt.
Okay. And again, this comes back to when, you know, as you know, as Hal points out all the time, we get, you know, supply and demand is the first law of economics, but it, and the thing is that credit supply is part of supply.
Without a doubt. Well, right. that is in the last 40 years, Carl, I mean, again, if Joel pops up, let him in, but
he's up.
Okay, yeah, well, just up. Let me finish this one. In the last 40 years, well, since I've been in school, the piece of economics that is so screwed now, skewed, wherever both of those terms apply, is that money is a factor of production. It's right. Part of, if I want to build a building, I need concrete, I need steel, I need toilets, I need sinks, and oh, by the way, I need the money to build it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, right, but since the government's been screwing around so much for the last 20 years, people don't even take that into consideration. And it is a part of consideration.
Yeah.
And yet nobody thinks it is. Well, if you're big enough, it's free, basically.
Yeah, but that's never true.
Yeah, well, but it's sort of true. I mean, what was Amazon, those guys?
I get what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
No, I get it.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for yesterday. Good stuff today. Well, Hal doesn't realize I'm going to grill him with the thing about the Jerry Ford aircraft carrier and how many days they've been at sea and their first time out.
Oh, by the way, they've got serious issues with there, and that they had a fire in the laundry area.
Thing's been at sea for 240 days.
Well, I understand that, Chief, but what you have to understand about fires is that on board a ship, they're pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much the worst thing that can happen, right? They didn't manage to contain it until it got into several of the berthing areas.
Oh, really?
So this is not. There is a serious issue within our naval forces right now.
We don't
it's
have
not being talked about.
Well, if we're going to do what we're doing, which I'm not all for. Anyway, we'll talk about it on Friday.
Yeah,
because,
this is something we ought to go out on Friday, yeah.
Joel, how are you, buddy? Is he with us?
Yes, he is.
Joel?
He is. He's up, but he's on mute. So.
Unmute thyself.
Yeah, he might be away from the computer as of right now. I'll keep trying him.
All right. Yeah, because...
I got it.
There you
Sorry
go,
about
bud.
That, Chief. Sorry about that. Good morning.
Good morning. How did you guys lose to Purdue, yet you got the number one seed?
overall body of work, you know.
You didn't slip them a 20?
It did penalize us in the fact that we moved from 2 to 3. So you have that kind of record. You win the Big Ten by 4 games, which is pretty unprecedented, and they look at it. So by losing to Purdue, they lost the number 2 seed.
So you're assuming that the they's are straight?
I'm sorry?
You're assuming that the they's are straight and have a reason?
Yeah, that's not. But you know, Chief, you never like to lose, right?
No.
And you want to win the Big Ten tournament and stuff. But do you know, I mean, when it comes down to it, you need to win 6 straight games to win the title.
Yep.
And Michigan's won a lot of games, you know, over the – I mean, I think they won 32 on the season. They've had a major winning streak since they lost to Duke. And I'm not saying that Dusty didn't want to win the game and he didn't coach to win the game. I think that there's – anybody that does sports knows, like, you can only peak so many times. You can only go to the well so many times. So, yeah, I don't like losing to Purdue. I wish we could have won the Big Ten title and just, you know, keep on dancing. But I think that overall, I mean, who's going to care if we make it to the, you know, the Final Four, the final game, or win it all? Who's going to really
care about
the Big Ten championship?
I think you did win the Big Ten title going away. And I think the championship is absolutely useless, and all it's going to do is hurt people and then create a few money, some money for somebody.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, you did win. You played all year for that, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
And then, but do you really? I remember, I'll be very brief because I've told the story before, when the Irish had a good team. Digger was still coaching. They had, remember Troy Murphy? He was on their team.
Yeah.
Well, it was Troy's last year, and they lost, like, on Friday night in the Big East tournament. And they were all fired up. And Digger thought he had an NCAA Final Four team, and they actually went pretty far, I think. And he was happy as a clam. He didn't have to play two more games at that level. He was ready for the NCAA. He didn't want to play two more games in the Big East tournament.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I have a feeling the Michigan coach felt the same way.
Yeah, I mean, and also, boy, there was...
I mean, it doesn't mean you threw it. It just means you're not all unhappy. You're not playing two more games.
Exactly. Exactly. And so we'll get down to
it. So what do you think about the market here? And the VIX back down to 23. It's been up to 30, back down to 23, kind of in the middle of a war, which was amazing volatility in the VIX, given the fact that, it doesn't look like we've got peace or anything else going here. I mean, it's amazing how much... The VIX has fluctuated.
I'm just amazed by the resiliency in this market. I'm amazed at the price action. Yesterday, we do have a quad witch expiration coming up. That quad witch could predict a lot of volatility and turning points. Also, the day after, the Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, where the options reset, are very important here. But in view of all the circumstances that we have been dealing with, for this market to be at the cash index at 6,700, I mean, to me, it's a gift. It's a gift, and maybe it's a gift it's going to keep on giving, but it is the resiliency of this market under the circumstances, to me, is...
What makes you think we're not just pouring money in?
I'm sorry?
What makes you think it's not a gift from the Fed?
I mean, I don't know who it's a gift from.
Give us the money supply numbers, we'll know. By the way, I was mistaken. It wasn't Digger, it was Mike Bray, who tried coach Troy Murphy. My decades messed up. That happens. You start to mix up your decades.
Yeah, that does. That does happen from time to time for me, too.
By the way, I really enjoyed being on your show. You guys asked some really good questions, and... I think your audience is pretty bright with the amount of questions you guys get in.
Yep. I appreciate
you. So give yourself a shameless plug, will you?
Stock Trader Network.
Yeah.
You can go to StockTraderNetwork.com and do a free trial. We give about besides a pre-market prep show that we do an hour every day, conflicts with the Chief Show a little bit here, but we do about additional 4 to 5 hours of programming per day, options, futures, opening and closing imbalances for the active and also the passive investor. But yeah, Chief, you always come in, you'd always throw a good perspective into the market, and I know our chat wants to have you back real soon.
Well, I mean, it's a lot different. I mean, it would be a lot like Stocks and Jacks would be if the market was open when I did the show, because you guys are talking about imbalances, you're talking about stuff that's happened as it happens, and it's fun. It's different, but it's fun.
Yeah, well, we try and make the markets fun, and you know how that is, difficult that could be on a day-to-day basis. I think today, I'm going to watch to see how this oil plays out. back at the high of the move, oil up 4%, and talking about the USO here. And then you have Delta Airlines. I don't know how this got out of the press room, but they raised guidance under these circumstances. So... I'd be keeping an eye on that today. Also, what I'd be keeping an eye on is NVIDIA. Jensen Huang came out yesterday with some really big predictions for his company. The move initially was well received. It was faded a little bit, Chief, but the bulls and the bears are digging in here on St. Paddy's Day. So I want you to go buy that green Chicago River and have a beer for me.
By the way, I met that guy one night.
Really?
Yeah. At a barbecue place in Indiana. His family's been doing this since 1962. He's the only one in his family who's not a fireman. His dad was in the whatever union that does it. The best story was he got contracted to do it in Dublin. Evidently, there's a river. I've never been to Dublin, but evidently, there's a river in Dublin. So the stuff they use is orange. So there's all these people on the bridge, you know, wanting to see him dye the river because it was all, was advertised. Well, the people on the bridge saw that the dye is orange, and they all started winging beer bottles at him, thinking he was an imposter from the north. So he dodged the beer bottles, poured the stuff into the river, and then when you go by it with the propellers, it all turns a deep green. Then they all started cheering him and stopped throwing the bottles at him. So for a while, it was pretty tough dodging the beer. They thought he was an imposter from the north who was going to dye the river orange.
Wow, that's a good one. All right, Chief.
As long as they missed his head with the beer, it was a good one.
All right, everyone, be safe out
there.
Take
care of yourself.
Talk to you next week.
Do we have Kenny?
I don't see any Kenny, but we do have Carl, though.
Kenny will probably pop in unless he's heading out to be on the TV. So, Carl, we got a few more minutes until Kenny piles on. What do you make of things right here? We've got gold and silver down. Where do you see this big rally in Bitcoin coming from? And since it started, it's up like $12,000.
Yeah, you know, that doesn't make any sense.
No, but but you don't want to be shorted either.
Well, duh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like my trading account to have a positive balance in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that I don't understand. So, you know, the issue I've always had with this whole concept with Bitcoin in the general sense is that it's the idea that it's an asset implies that there's something behind it, right? I mean, we can argue over the valuation of, you know, of a company like NVIDIA and the crazy hype that's going on in the AI space, but NVIDIA at least has factories,
and they do make money. Some, yeah.
Well, but I mean, they have physical assets.
Yep.
Okay. There is a fab line somewhere that makes their chips. There's a building there, right? Now we can argue over what that physical set of assets is worth. But there certainly is something there. The thing you want to talk about something that makes absolutely no sense. All right, so since the first bombs flew in Iran, their internet connectivity has been effectively zero. Now, a large part of that is because the Iranian guards have cut off the service. Okay, so I mean this, and part of that's a defensive act because anything that emits energy can be tracked, and you can send a bomb there and blow it up. Getting things blown up is bad.
Yep.
So, you know, but if you happen to have a whole bunch of Iranian, I don't know what their currency unit is, but they're you know, you have their currency, but it's you have it in Bitcoin. You might as well have lit it on fire. Okay, it is essentially the same situation that arose when FDR turned around and deemed that, you know, gold was not convertible, and by the way, it's illegal. You have to turn it over for, you know, $20 an ounce or whatever it was. And a lot of people said screw you.
It's the Iranian rial.
Yeah. Okay. But a lot of people left, you know, said screw you, and, you know, left it in their, you know, in their little safe in their house or under their bed or, you know, whatever, right? They said, we're not turning that over. Go bite it. The problem is, for the next 40 years, until that whole scheme collapsed, you had something that was really shiny and nice to look at, but it wasn't worth a nickel.
I think you'd always sell it to the government, couldn't you?
Or for the $20.
Yeah. Well, then it became 35. You know. Then it became.
Yeah. But point being that, you know, you could sell the government at that price, but that was all you could do with it. Okay. So it was not a medium of exchange. It was not a store of value. Now, 40 years later, all of a sudden, it becomes one again. But look, I'm 62. What are the odds I live to be 104? Okay. I mean, you know, the actuarial odds on that aren't real good. So
maybe your daughter will be one of the people who shows up at 80 at the guys for the free oysters and brings the pops because he's alive too.
Well, you know, you never know, right? But I just look at this. If you didn't if you didn't get a wake-up call as somebody who's in any of these cryptos when the shooting started over there, you're not very smart. Well, and it, you know what? Obviously, there's an awful lot of people out there that aren't. I am gobsmacked at, you know, I mean, Joel's just talking, you know, the quote-unquote resilience. Okay, well, you know what? Everything is a function of supply and demand when you really get down to it. That's the first law of economics. Nobody ever repeals it. The reality is nobody believes this stuff is anything other than a sideshow. And that's why you're seeing what you're seeing in the market.
Well, you've got governments now propping it up. You've got the president's sons involved.
Well, I get that. But at the end of the look, when I look at what's going on at the, you know, underneath the level of the of that surface stuff within the economy, you see rapidly escalating, you know, the fuel cost issue, which, by the way, some people are, they're lying about that too. All right, the idea that this is like an extra $1,000 in the trucker's tank when he fills up his, you know, his saddle tanks in the truck. No, it's not. It's about $200. But $200 is still $200.
Well, okay?
But
you have been a guy who's been saying how it is the diesel market has been screwed, skewed for a while, and this just makes it even worse.
Well, and by the way, we have a guy in the White House who if he had a brain in his head, which he very clearly does not, the very first thing he could have done, and he has the authority in a time of war under the DPA, he could have banned both diesel and LNG exports for the duration of this conflict.
Not if they're a big contributor, you can't do that.
Hey, listen, I'm not saying it isn't corrupt. How much corruption have we found, right?
Just for edumacation, as my aunt used to say, for a long time, there was a law that says that the U.S. could not export crude. Of course, this is back when we were pumping half of what we were using and importing the rest.
Right.
But I think we always could export completed products.
Well, but there wasn't any going out.
No, I think the law was crude, but all along the way, you could have exported some diesel or heating oil if you wanted to.
Well, here's the basic problem, all right? So here's, when you think about how stupid this really is. Well,
on Sunday, diesel's what? Is it 40 cents more than gas now, pretty much?
Well, more than that. It's $4.99 around here.
Well, for most of my lifetime, was less than gas.
It was cheaper in the summer, reliably.
Yes.
Because it's the same thing as heating oil.
Right.
And of course, nobody needs to heat their house in
June. Unless you're in the Northeast, nobody heats their house with oil anyway. I mean.
Well, but nobody heats their house in June.
Okay. Right.
In the Northeast or anywhere else. All right. So, yeah. So as a result, diesel was cheaper than gas. And by the way, it has about 20% more energy content. So that's a double win because it gets better economy. You get better mileage. But here is the basic problem. You have these nations that have prayed at the green altar, okay, that have vowed they're going to, you know, no more fossil fuels. Except all that means is they're not digging the stuff out of the ground themselves.
Right.
All right. So what they're doing instead is that now you've got people around the world that are bidding up the price of transport fuels. And if I run a refinery, I'll sell to the guy who's got the biggest check.
Well, plus you don't let anybody use bunker fuel anymore.
All right. But and by the way, you can't control the crack to that degree. You can't say, well, we don't want any of that. That's not how it works. So you've got this. You've got these distortions that have been built into this, okay? And to give you an idea how stupid this is, there's been some analysis done on this, because one of the things that Biden's administration did was get a bunch of states to require under law that school buses become EVs, that they be electric, all right? The cost to operate those vehicles is now in, because there've been a few of them bought, a few of them equipped with the charging stations, everything else that they need at the, you know, at the yard where the buses are kept. The cost of operation per mile is more than five times that of diesel.
That works. Hey, I have a question that maybe only you can answer. When I was a Ute, did he say Ute? Actually, if you go on, I guess probably on one of the Netflix or someplace, if you go see some of the movie, the TV show Crime Stories, you'll still see the old city buses, the flexible coach buses, the big bobbing things.
Oh, yeah.
Those were all propane. What is the efficiency of that? They had propane. They claim the only reason why they took them out of business is nobody make motors that ran on propane. They claim they were very good on pollution. They were cheap to run. I mean, I've never heard propane of a propane. Is it sort of like a natural gas vehicle? But propane is more liquid, isn't it?
Propane or natural gas will burn perfectly well in a combustion engine. You can actually buy a retrofit kit for a spark ignition engine. You can get dual fuel backup generators.
But is propane when it enters the bus or enters your stove? It's still a gas, right?
No. Well, so propane is a liquid at reasonable temperatures and pressures, which is why you can go buy a barbecue tank full of it.
That's what I mean. When you swish it, it moves around.
Well, but the thing is that the challenge with natural gas is that LNG, which requires cryogenic cooling, okay?
Yeah, so you're down 200-some degrees below zero or something, right?
Right, so you could use it as a transportation fuel in a long-haul truck because you would burn it off fast enough to prevent it from having to be vented, okay, as long as the truck's moving. It doesn't work in like a school bus because that's not true, but you can do CNG, which is just compressed natural gas. And in fact, there are some commercial stations. There's one in this area because the gas company runs it, right?
Well, Ozinga, they have a huge part of the ready mix concrete thing here in Chicago. They did a big deal where they made all their trucks over a period of time natural gas. I'd love to have somebody on from there to see how it worked out. There were natural gas charging stations. You would think that, like, people's gas, all their vans would be natural gas, but they weren't. But you actually could go. But I mean, propane is, I guess I'm trying
well, they
to...
Well, they are here. The gas...
But I haven't heard anybody doing that anymore. That was a 10-year-ago thing.
Chief, the economics of it only work in certain services. And the problem with compressed natural gas is the range. Because the tank has to be there, and you have to have somewhere to put it. It's a hoop-wrapped fiberglass tank. It's got a service life. It cannot be recertified because it cannot undergo a second hydro cycle, unlike a metal tank can. So it's a one-and-done deal. But they are you could absolutely run any spark ignition engine on it. It works just fine.
These guys did not do this for the concrete trucks. They had a much bigger feed put in from the gas company where they could fill it direct.
Well, yeah, no, that's what they. That's the same thing. We've got like.
But
I
they
said,
had plenty. It was plenty of gas.
Yeah.
For the truck to do its deliveries that day and fill up that night, and I think it was.
Right.
But I'm saying that move is gone. Now it's all gone electric.
That move is gone because the economics except in certain cyclic environments like a trash truck that has a known route or whatever have you, the math doesn't work on it.
Okay, so what I'm going with is these propane buses were they efficient and were they?
Oh, yeah.
I used to see the big propane tanks at the bus barn, but so in
right,
other words,
the problem, Chief, is the propane's expensive.
Oh, it is now. That's what I'm guessing.
That's the issue. Is it propane? So it's the same situation. We have people around here that are far enough away. There's no gas main that runs down the street by their house, right? So those folks, if you got a brain in your head and you live around here, and that's your situation, you run dual fuel. You have a heat pump, and you've got propane as the secondary source. But you have to, every time you get a propane delivery, you have to calculate where the crossover point is, which is the cheaper to use at a given temperature. And a lot of people do not do this correctly, and a lot of the installers don't do it correctly. And I've helped a couple of people around here that were getting absolutely stupendously high bills for heating their house because they're running on propane anytime.
Well, is the propane tank mostly liquid or mostly gas?
It's all liquid.
Okay.
Because at reasonable temperatures, propane is a liquid, okay, under pressure. That's, again, that's why you can have a barbecue tank and carry it around, all right? The thing, the problem with it is the price.
When you open it up, the valve, it becomes a gas and the gas flows, not liquid.
Right, that's right. Yes. Yeah, what comes out of the line is a gas.
Right.
But it burns perfectly well, and it's a perfectly viable fuel. The problem with it is money. It's expensive.
Well, so it's more expensive than natural gas a lot.
But by a factor of about 4 or 5.
Okay.
Not a little.
So they go from home heating oil to natural gas in the north, or propane doesn't really help you out that much.
Well, it depends. It fluctuates in price. All right. Now, if you want to buy it when, you know, in the middle of the winter, because your tank's empty, grab your ankles. All right. On the other hand, if you're wise enough to, you know, to stagger things and, you know, buy it in the summertime when it's not nearly so crazy, and the stuff stores basically forever because it's under pressure and doesn't have any contaminants in it. So, you know, as long as the tank's got integrity, you fill it in June.
By the way, while you're concerned about this war in the Middle East, the insane comment yesterday was Trump says he thinks he will have the honor of taking Cuba.
Oh, I saw that.
Honor.
Honor. Yeah, well, you know, the concept of take, you know, isn't it interesting that back in 1940... In the beginning of 1941, what did we do? Did we not essentially blockade, for all intents and purposes, oil going to this little dinky country somewhere? And then that little dinky country somewhere decided that they'd had about enough of our crap and tried to blow us up.
Well, the difference between what we did there and what this guy's doing to Cuba is we saw what Japan was all about and what they did to China.
We had a
little more motivation.
I
don't understand what the motivation is with Cuba.
Well, Chief, I get it. Okay, I mean, we didn't like what was going on with the war over there between Japan and China, and we decided to backdoor get involved in it.
Once they were done with them, they were coming the other direction.
Well, maybe they were. That's always the argument. I saw this line of BS that has been run all over social media. Oh yeah, Iran really was making bombs with the uranium, and I've already gone through why that's a complete lie. Okay, but there's still plenty of people out there trying to defend this. Is that that being
people are going to defend this because they will defend this guy to the end.
I don't think they're defending him. I think they're defending Netanyahu.
Well, okay, that's another. But you know, I don't. I have
by the way,
this morning they claim they killed the head of.
Oh yeah,
security.
I saw that too.
But I have on the one hand, I have no love for the people in Iran that will kill people in the name of religion like they're. You know, like there's spiders on the sidewalk.
It's a violent political movement wrapped in the cloak of religion. Yeah,
it's exactly right. So I'm not all that, upset that the Supreme Ayatollah met his demise. Although I don't know how much he was calling the shots at age 86. But the idea that now we've opened up this thing of warfare that if we don't like what you're doing, we can knock off your leaders. And I appall.
Oh no, I actually like that.
Well, okay. I mean, on some level, I'm kind of with you. You can't be totally. I don't have a problem with the leaders if they start something being part of the people in charge. When I say in charge, at the head of the charge. I'm not so sure that other people can determine they don't like what's going on in the country and start assassinating people. And part of what is going on from the Netanyahu government, and I won't say the Jewish people because it's not the Jewish people, I don't think, is when you start knocking people off right and left, and I don't like this. I appall what happened in Michigan. This guy running when he ran this SUV into the and I, there's no I could never do a violence on an innocent person. I mean, I can't ever justify it. But I also know that if somebody would have knocked off my family, like they knocked off that guy's family, I'd be pissed at somebody. Now, you shouldn't be pissed at the people in the synagogue in Michigan. I mean, I get that part. But you're pissed at somebody. And but it's not exactly the way, I mean, in Gaza, I mean, I read someplace that one of six people in Gaza has a family member that's been killed by the Israelis.
Okay.
It's not exactly the way to influence people and make friends.
Well, no, and here's one of the things that goes along with this. This just was in the news recently. There was during the middle of that, you know, that whole thing, they grabbed some Palestinian dude and raped him in the butt with a pair of scissors.
Yeah.
Okay. The prosecutor's office dropped the charges. The assault itself was caught on video, and so was the fact that they had to take him, that he had, you know, the hospital had to sew up his butthole. All right. Now, the ultra-nationalist Israelis over there threatened to burn down the police office because they were putting these guys on trial for doing this. So this violent political movement wrapped in religious cloaks isn't just from one place. It's very common. And by the way, we've got a guy who is our current ambassador, Mike Huckabee, who has taken the exact same position in public on Tucker Carlson's show as a Christian.
Yeah, it's a.
So now I got all three of the biggest.
Well, you're not going to get this Christian to go there.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, but I'm not saying that because you're Christian, this is your point of view.
Oh, I get it.
I what I'm saying is that I don't care if the cloak you're wrapping yourself in is Muslim, Christian, or Jewish.
How many people in this country were all for waterboarding?
Well, I'm just, all I'm saying, well, hold on now. There is a difference between interdicting terrorism via means that are less than pleasant, all right? When you, and again, you know, as a thought experiment, I've run this on people before, it makes them very uncomfortable. Let's just say that I build a nuclear device in my basement. I managed to get my hands on some plutonium and some explosives, and I do the physics calculations, and I figure out how to do this. And now I've got the thing, okay? And I stick it in the middle of Chicago somewhere. And then I pick up the phone, and I call the police or the FBI or whoever. In 24 hours, kaboom. And you have you do your baseline investigation. You have every reason to believe that the threat is credible. I really did build the thing. It really does exist. I'm not lying. All right. And you catch me. And you got 24 hours to figure out where it is before half the city gets leveled. Do you do it?
I have a real problem with that because everybody.
Oh, I listen. There are no good answers.
Okay, but what I'm saying is the problem is. You've just described something that, you know, most people probably would roll with you, okay?
Well,
but
I don't know.
But here's the problem. Every single stupido in this country thinks they get to make that line themselves. But we have.
Well, Chief.
I mean, we have the Patriot Act is all about, you want some dude with a turban raping your mother? I mean, okay, look what it's done to us.
I'm not saying... I'm not saying I like where it went.
But we also have not agreeing
with it where it went.
We also have a document that is really the heart and soul of this country that says every person is created equal and it has inalienable rights. And the more we say everybody that I agree has inalienable rights, get them, and the other people don't, the more we get off the reservation, and that's where we're at.
Now hold on a minute. We also. If you believe that governments and that nations, that I don't have the right to rob you, okay? That document also includes the right not to be robbed, okay? Which, by the way, I argue it does, all right? Then in that case, those particular things that are protected only apply to people who are A, within our boundaries of our country, and B, are here lawfully.
That's not what it says.
That is not what it says. I get that, Chief, but here's the problem with this.
So you're okay with exporting people to countries they didn't even come from and getting tortured over there?
No, they never should have been here in the first place.
Okay, but they still have rights.
No, wait a minute. Now you're saying that if I can manage to get my feet on this soil, I can steal.
No, I think
yes.
I didn't say you could steal.
Yes, you did.
And it also means by virtue of
being here, I've taken from the people who have a right to be here.
You go way too far with that. That's one of the biggest.
Are we arguing over whether it's a penny at a time or whether it's $1 billion at a time?
The document is pretty. It says everybody has rights, and everybody has an. Doesn't it say that?
When was the last time you read it?
A couple of weeks ago.
Did you read the Declaration or did you read the Constitution?
I'm reading the Declaration. It's also this one of the amendments takes that right to its extreme.
Which one of those amendments?
If you want, next time you're on, I'll go through it because there's a serious answer on Quora about that.
Quora's full of shit. I've looked at that.
Okay, Kevin. In the amendment, it says it specifically talks about the difference between citizens and people, and when they make it very clear. But the idea of how people being treated, I think if we invade Iran, oh God, I hope we don't. Those people have a right to be treated civilly, both by the Geneva Convention and otherwise. I don't say I don't like that person. He doesn't get to be treated right. I don't get to
no,
do
no,
that.
No, wait a minute. I don't think we have a right to impose our standards and our Constitution upon people outside the United States.
I believe that the torture in the long run harms the torturer as much as the other person.
I'm not saying it doesn't. And I'm not arguing for torturing people outside the U.S. What I am arguing is that the persons when you look if you're talking about the 14th Amendment,
yep,
okay, which I assume that's where you're going. 14th Amendment says, Section 1, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. The word "and" is there. Statutory construction means what it says.
I'll find the one I'm talking about. The point is, I actually believe this. I mean, I know when you have...
Well, the 14th Amendment is incorporation, which is where you get
legal system... By the way, when it hells up, we'll go to... if you have a legal system that says you're innocent until proven guilty, we know that guilty people are going to walk. We know it. If you have one that says you're guilty until proven innocent, you know innocent people are going to be convicted. We chose A.
I fully believe in that. What we have, however, is a system where A no longer applies if you have money or political power.
Well,
you can do whatever the hell you want, regardless of what the statute says, and it makes absolutely no difference.
Well, not only that, if you can't afford $1,000 why do you think my guys that I'm going to meet tomorrow night that are like 80 years old are still defending people?
Well,
because they're still willing to do it at a reasonable price, and they get calls every day from people who look for help.
Yeah. Oh, do I think our system is operating as intended? No.
So I think we absolutely need, and I don't know how we're going to get it. I guess I'm enough of a goofball to think that if we had the right person in charge, and I can't pick anybody from either party that right now I would say I would want. The closest I actually thought Romney was a fairly moral and level guy. Fairly. I mean, I'm talking about all the people in the last however many years. I'm not talking about Solomon, but I'm saying I'm trying to pick somebody I thought actually had a moral fiber and had the ability to put two numbers together. He might have been okay. I thought Jerry Ford was okay. And there's not
Well, you know, Jerry Ford was a selection from a bunch of very well-connected people.
I'm just saying, as an individual, I thought he was somewhat grounded. I'm just saying. I didn't say perfect, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, but we were talking about picking the best out of a den of thieves for some of these guys, right? I mean,
well, we are. I mean, isn't that, you know, this is kind of where the problem is, right? It's all a bunch of scams.
I mean, I don't see a Dan Inouye anymore. Do you? I mean,
well, I don't know that I would necessarily consider him to be.
Well, I mean, I thought he was pretty above reproach when it came to, you know, governmental stuff. I mean, I don't know anything about his personal life, but anyway. So what do you say? Hey, Al, are you there?
Yeah.
I have a...
Just...
Carl, you can hang for a bit if you want.
Banter back and forth, playfully.
When I was reading this article yesterday regarding our new aircraft carrier, not so new anymore, the Jerry Ford, and how long they've been at sea and some of the problems they're having.
Yeah, they've been at sea for what, 10 months straight?
200 and something days, and if they make it to 300, it's a record at the U.S. Midway. But now this is sort of different because... I don't think they have been anywhere. They haven't piled into a port the whole time.
So if they haven't been in a port, I can tell you this from being on the Truxton for 30 days straight. Now, serving the military is different now than it was then. Then, you didn't have laptops, Wi-Fi, cell phones. You got an email, not an email. You got like a teletype message from your mom. Once a month, maybe. When you're in port, you got to make a phone call. But in today's Navy, probably everybody has laptops with thousands of hours of video or songs in their laptop. You have your smartphones. So life on ship is much different than it was when I was in the Navy. And if we had stayed out to sea for 35 days straight without hitting a port, we would have been pretty frazzled. There probably would have been more gun decking of maintenance. Gun decking and maintenance is where you just sign it off and don't do it. And apparently this fire was started by lint. And it happened a couple years earlier where they had a lint fire. Nobody got injured then. So I'm kind of thinking
Isn't this ship's first sojourn?
Well, I think it had a fire prior to that.
Oh, okay.
I think when they're doing their shakedown
or
something.
Well, let me fill in the blanks a little bit. Yeah. The thing was
I think they did a shakedown because you have to shake down a ship before you actually take it to sea.
Well, they shipped it.
I heard they had a fire earlier, maybe late 2023.
Well, this is the new aircraft carrier, the most expensive ship ever built. And it was sent from Norfolk to the Mediterranean, I think. And then Trump yanked it over to Venezuela for whatever that thing was down there.
So these guys, if they're not getting port visits, they got to get some port visits.
They went to Venezuela. Then they went back to the Mediterranean. Then they sent them through the Suez. And evidently, there were a couple spots where the thing had like a couple of feet. It was not necessarily designed to go through the Suez, but it did make it. And now it's been leading the charge on what's going on in Iran. And they're up to 230 days or something. And 266, it's like the second longest ever. And the record is, I think, the Midway during Vietnam.
The commanding officers of those vessels, when they're told to go underway, I don't think they question it, and they're gung-ho about it because it helps them make rank. Our CO volunteered for every little excursion he could. We were gone from our home port like almost entire year. We were probably in our home port for a year and a half, maybe a couple months out of the year. We were always gone. We were always being volunteered to do this or do that, and it really harms morale if you're underway that long. It really does. People don't understand it, but it really harms morale.
One of my buddies was...
And they get upset. They may not be verbalizing, but they get upset, and things like cleaning out lint stops. And people just get to the point where I think they're probably signing it off, and then you get a fire that injures two people. I'm just saying from experience, if I was underway for that long, I would be a little frazzled, and my Navy buddies would be too.
Well, yeah, one of my buddies, he and his boss, I guess they must be a little connected, but they're able to go from Washington and land on a carrier, and it was like the Enterprise, some huge ship. But he goes, when you're coming down on that thing, they were even like on a prop job, right? So it wasn't like they were on a jet. He goes, you're looking down there, you see all this water, and you see this thing, it looks like a postage stamp.
Oh, man.
He goes,
I've never landed on one of those carriers.
He goes, I tell you what, if I would have known what it was like, I would never have said, I'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, from above, from, you know, 10,000 feet, the ship probably looks like, you know.
Yeah. And he
I mean, if you're looking at a dartboard, the dartboard is probably the size of a pin on a freaking wall. I mean,
yeah, he goes, so you land on a thing.
It would be pretty unnerving.
He says there's all these people in there with the, there's, you know, there's close to 5,000 people. I don't, this one has 4,500. He says, yeah, the noise. He goes, how does anybody ever sleep? He goes, this is in the middle of, like, it's off Washington. They're doing like a shakedown cruise, but every time one of those things takes off or lands, you're like, the whole thing. He goes, how does anybody sleep? He goes, what?
Yeah, you know, I mean, when I was an instructor at the A1W plant in Idaho Falls, Idaho, now it's been long decommissioned. We simulated the aircraft operations with a thing called a dump condenser, and man, holy crap! When you open up that valve, it was like a catapult. It just, the sound. I had the 3M plugs in my ear, and I probably suffered. I was out there all the time. Anytime there was, when I was newly qualified, anytime we needed to simulate flight operations, they'd send me out there to watch the dump condenser, and that room was just loud. I just remember my ears kind of ringing after getting out of there.
So, but we're down to like 10 aircraft carriers, and we're going to have them all out at sea. There's 4,500 people on these things. So the guy who's cooking has cooked 4,500 meals.
Well, it's not a guy.
Okay, but I'm saying the people
it's
cooking.
It's an army of cooks in there.
On
the Truxton, we had about 10 people in our galley, and we only had 500 people. So there's probably 80 people.
But still, you're talking 4,500 meals probably four times a day, yeah, for 200 and
some
days.
There might be even 1,000 or 100 in there. I don't know.
But for that many days in a row, yeah, without a break? I mean, good Lord.
Well, they get supply ships. The supply ships will pull up
I know,
next
but
to
I'm saying
just,
it's not the same as being off. How many ports can handle 4,500 people piling off and going to the bars?
Hey, those foreign countries love American soldiers.
But there's a difference between 500 and 4,500.
Well, you know, I tell my students, if you want to know my Navy stories, maybe we wait until you graduate from college, and then maybe 10 years later, then maybe I'll tell
How many ports
Navy stories?
Can the Ford, do they go in and tie up? I mean, there can't be too many ports for the damn
thing. Well, when we pulled into Pattaya, we call it Pattaya Beach. In the movies, they call it Pattaya Beach. Every Navy guy I know calls it Pattaya. But we went into Pattaya Beach, Thailand, and all the ships were anchored out. And what happens is these locals on these floating, like, piers, their house is actually a floating pier. They'll drive their pier, their house, out to a ship. We'll tie up to it. And then these other guys with these long, like 15-foot-long canoe-style boats with a motor on the end and a long drive shaft that goes into the water, they'll come out and they'll pick up the sailors on these floating piers that a family lives on. And about 10 guys get in one of these boats. And what happens is the boat is designed to go right up on the sand. And then you climb out of the boat and you walk in the water about 7 inches deep. And then you go into the city. That's how we get on the shore. And I suspect this is used all throughout Asia and Africa. It's kind of like when the, you know, Master and Commander, I don't know if you've seen that movie, but the Master and Commander movie where they want to go ashore and they trade with the locals. Well, little boats come out, and I think then the women are allowed to come on the boat to provide services for the men. And then they also exchanged not only the sexual services, they also exchanged like British goods for maybe money, for local fruits and vegetables, and maybe some dried meats and fish, salted fish.
Is all the I won't say all, but is all the male dominated? Everybody goes to the House of Ill Repute. Is that kind of changed now that half the, not half, but a lot of the people on,
you know,
the border?
The last time I was underway and in a foreign port was 90.
Well, you didn't have any women on your boat. I guess what I'm getting to.
There was the beginning of women on boats back then. when I got out, women were being admitted into the nuclear power program.
But if 10
so
people go
that
out,
and stuff has changed.
If 10 people go out to the bar and half of them are women, where the guys peel off and the women sit in the bar while the guys head to the whorehouse? I mean,
well,
that'd be a little uncomfortable.
Know, lots of things happen underway. Like, for example, on the USS Cape Cod, I think one of the chiefs who was supervising a group of sailors, and I think half of them were women, I think he got busted and sent to the brig for prostituting the women in his under his command.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And there were a lot of women. I mean, it's an experiment. There were a lot of women who were, you know, flown home because they had gotten pregnant underway on the what we call the West Pack.
Well, 300 days is a long time.
It is, yeah. It's and we're talking about sailors, you know, right out of high school, 18-year-old to 22-year-old men who have urges, you know.
Well, not like there's the women, not like the women the don't.
Tom, there's a reason why the Victoria's Secret catalog was the most popular magazine on our ship. One, it's free, and two, it had really pretty women in it.
Well, yeah, that's a...
Yeah. There was one in every crevice of our ship.
So you're crevice. Saying... Now, I mean, we're not... If we're going to be fighting all these wars, I think we need some more ships or something. You can't just... I mean, out of the 10 aircraft carriers, how many of them are even seaworthy at any given time? Six?
Well, you know, if you're underway for 10 months in a row, you know, it's going to get dangerous.
It used to be six, right?
Yeah, I think it was six. Yeah.
Actually, I read this.
These new Gerald Ford things are incredible, though, from what I've read.
Well, they are, but I still have it. I think I kept it. It was in Newsweek. Some guy. This has to be pushing 20 years ago. We had 16 aircraft carriers, and he said that the deal was is that. That because you wanted four out at any given time, and so if you took
the ones that aren't out, they got to get some R&R. They got to see their wife, and kids, and their friends.
His point was the cycle they had back then. We had one out in Japan. We always had one in the Mediterranean, one in the East Coast. We had one in the Indian Ocean. That was the spread. So, but there were four out, and you went out for 6 months. Okay, when you came back. So the ship is pretty much totally wrecked. Everything has to
the seawater tends to do that.
Well, not just the seawater. The elevators where you're taking the planes from the you know the hangar deck up, they're all shot. Everything, every door that opens automatically is shot. I mean, it's absolutely been used and abused for 6 months. So it goes back into port. Everybody is pretty much let go in terms of two-thirds of the people, it's the end of their...
Well, the people standing watching the nuclear power plant, they're not let go. No, we stand a 24-hour duty day every other day, and then we have our 8-hour work day.
Okay.
So our import time
I understand, but
is
I'm,
probably
I'm,
worse
I'm
than
giving
our
underway
you
the, time. The sequence. Of course, this is the way it was. And he said, okay, if the sequence is for everybody, most of the sailors, it's just like you. It's the end of your 2 years, and you're gone. He says, now all of a sudden...
Well, ours was a 6-year program.
Okay, but... I'm telling you what the story was. This is years ago.
Yeah.
So now it's changed. But so then you have this ship that's in the yard, and for the next 6 months, it's not moving. It's torn apart.
Yeah.
And so then you get it pretty much back together. The contractors are on there, and the other people are on there. The place is a mass of wires. You can't even really walk through it. Well, now you're starting to get your other group of I won't say draftees, but guys enlistees. That don't know anything, they're piling in there, learning about the ship, learning about some of the stuff on land.
Well, it's never 100% turnover.
There's I understand
usually,
that, but
it might be a 30% turnover.
I'm saying now you've got the new group. Now the new group gets acclimated. Then you've got 6 months for like shakedown cruises, getting everything together. Then you go back out for 6 months.
Yeah.
And if a captain goes through the 6 months, he was on the Mediterranean. We had some war going on over there, and he said the captain made it home without any. Buddy dying, which is means you become an admiral, damn near. He said, but the last month, the captain was all over everybody because everybody started to get sloppy. The last month out of the six, he goes, that's the hardest time because people are starting to get frayed, and you bring them back. And he said, okay, if we cut from 16 down to 12, which we did, and I think we're down to 10 now, because what you really did now is saying the month it's now an 8-month cycle. So somebody has to stay out 8 months if you want the same four carriers out there. Now, if you drop back to only one and two out there, then it's a different story. You have a few people in port, a few ships in port ready to roll. But he goes, this, the numbers, he goes, nobody thinks of it in terms of the numbers. It's for one of these ships to be 6 months out, it's like a year and a half in. That between the total refit of the place, the total, you know, the new crew and the shakedown, the training to go back out for 6 months, then you're absolutely in harm's way for 6 months. You come back, you do it all over again. Because if you try and make that an eight-month process, because the last couple of months of the 8 months is really tough. Now, these guys are 10 months. Now, are we going to have, are we going to go down to eight massive carriers where we want seven of them out at sea all the time? According to this guy, he would say that doesn't work.
If you tell a bunch of sailors they're going to be out for 6 months, that last month is horrible. If you tell them they're going to be out for 10 months, that last month is horrible.
Well, but his point
but
is...
But if you tell them they're going to be out for 6 months, and oh, by the way, month... We have 1 month left on that six-month cruise. Oh, by the way, we're going to stay out for another 4 months. Now you got an issue.
Well, I'm trying to jump not just from the people. If the hangar deck elevator, if you kind of know like anything else, you know, in your car, if you get to 300,000 miles, this is what happens to your motor. If you know that elevator is going to go up and down 20,000 times and all of a sudden it's going to need all new parts, and you say, after 20,000, we'll just stay out there for another 2 months. That implies you're starting to do a lot of work out there, or the thing's not going to work. So, I mean, there's a lot more to this story, as you know better than anybody.
Yeah.
There's stuff.
I roomed with the, I berthed with the Airedales, the helicopter crew, and every 100 hours, the mechanics and electricians would disassemble their helicopter, inspect every part, every little part. I'd walk into the helideck, and that thing was in parts on the ground, and then they would rebuild it every 100 hours from what they told me. It was crazy.
Well, I mean, because it's not just
that to you.
I mean, it's not just okay, keep going. It's like, okay, you know your car's transmission needs to be overhauled at 200,000 miles.
Yeah.
At 199, you can't just say keep driving.
Yeah.
I mean, which is kind of what they're doing to these guys, right? Or any of these guys.
Well, you know, that's why preventive maintenance is so important, and a lot of times when you're out there for extended periods of time, the preventive maintenance is just signed off because people have just so frazzled. I'm not saying everybody does it, but I'm saying a few people do it. And when a few people start doing it and people know that it's happening, that's when it can spiral out of control because now you're thinking, well, that guy's doing it. Why not me? He's not getting in trouble. So, I mean, just that last month is hard. But when you get to that last month and the captain says, we're going to be underway for another 4 months, I can't even imagine being on the ship without port visits. You know,
yeah.
It has.
What do you say we go to break here? I went into the other one. S&P futures now up 17. NASDAQ futures up 40. Gold's turned around. We're turning green here, pretty much all over the place. A little bit. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 17. NASDAQ futures up 44. We were down. We came in. We've turned back to being green. We were green yesterday. Not so sure where all this good news is coming from, but there must be some somewhere. DAX up 106.4%. FTSE up 79.8%. That's leading the pack here. CAC around up 57.7. So Europe up a little bit. Oil prices back over 100, which is a little bizarre. But Nikkei down 50. That's only, they call that flat. Hang Seng up 34.1%. So not much going on over in Europe, in Asia at all. Well, actually, the Shanghai is down 34.8%. They're a little bit of an outlier. Bonds down 1 basis point, 4.21. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.92. Oil up $1.92, 95.42, but Brent is over 100, up $2, 102.4. Oil was up a little more when we came in. It was up like 2-something, so that's probably one of the reasons we've turned around. Gold is up $18, silver up 19 cents. They were kind of flat when we came in. Now they've turned positive. Foreign exchange, pretty much unchanged, with the euro at 1.15 and the British pound 133, so not much going on there at all. Crypto down 245, but still a lofty year at 73,808. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Bulls win.
Hey, good morning, Chief. I know Bulls win. Surprise, right?
Yeah.
Chicago, 18 degrees right now with a high of 27. We're looking at 7:35 a.m. here. Brisk and quiet, cold with partial sunshine today. Tonight will be cloudy and cold. There might be some periods of snow late accumulating, according to about an inch of snow on the roads, so the roads can be slippery. Low temperature today will be 24 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 71 degrees right now with a high of 96. Partly sunny and very hot. Temperature approaching the record high of 99 set in 2007, and tonight will be clear and warm with a low of 66 degrees. Traffic in Chicago is looking pretty heavy right now. There's heavy traffic inbound on most major expressways except for Edens. Edens is looking a little clear right now. Traffic on Kennedy starts at Addison Street. We're starting to see some stop-and-go traffic from First Avenue on Eisenhower inbound, and lastly on Stevenson, Harlem Avenue is the start of the congestion. Now for the MLB spring training, yesterday the Diamondbacks beat Reds 11-6. White Sox lose to Rangers 3-2, and Cubs beat Guardians 5-2. Today we got White Sox Athletics at 3:05 p.m. and Cubs Angels at 8:05 p.m. For the NHL, the Blackhawks are hosting Minnesota Wild tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the United Center. And for the NBA, the Bulls beat Grizzlies yesterday 132-107, and the Suns lose to Celtics 120-112. Today we got Suns at Timberwolves at 7 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
The you're lucky, Hal, that you don't have your tribe is not old enough to go to spring break. Now you might ask why, if you're still with us.
Oh, I'm here. Yeah. I'm waiting with bated breath.
Evidently, there's a massive bed bug problems in Florida, Texas,
man,
and some of these other places. You remember when we were young, bed bugs were considered eradicated?
Yeah, well, you know, I woke up a couple times on the beach of Hawaii. What was it? Waikiki Beach. And bitten by all kinds of things. I don't know why we slept on the beach, but we got kicked off by police. It was like 6 in the morning. We had a little too much fun into the wee hours of the morning. And I was bitten by all kinds of things. So when I was 20, I was probably bitten by every bug you can think of.
My mother said that my dad, obviously when he died when I was 4, not too many conversations. When he was in the South Pacific, he was in the Signal Corps, so he manned radios. He wasn't really on the front line. But she said what he did that was kind of unique, I don't know who he learned it from, he had the four-poster, bed, the same thing we had in college, we had the military beds. He had a four-poster metal bed. So he would take a coffee can, fill it with oil, and then drop the bed, the legs, in the coffee can. So,
That makes sense.
So the stuff that crawled up would get in the oil and die.
Get stuck in the oil.
I've read other places, these guys would go catch four praying mantises, and they would tie them to the legs of the bed, because none of the other bugs gets by a praying mantis.
Have you ever seen the parasite that lives inside the praying mantis?
Oh God, no! I mean,
yeah, you pull that thing out and the thing dies.
Well, we used to rent a place in Michigan.
My brain from Facebook video.
Well, we used to rent a place in Michigan City, a deck. And he'd be out there having a couple of beers, barbecuing, and some guy'd walk by it. They were as big as a pencil. They were huge.
Yeah, they are big. Yeah,
but I mean, they don't bite. They're incredible looking guys. Well, you wouldn't want to be an insect that guy was after.
Well, it doesn't move too fast, right?
No, but he got long legs. I don't know what he does, but I think they eat hearty, the little guys. Anyway, what are we doing here in terms of we're not talking about it, and I don't know what the current administration, they seem, I think they're coming sort of unglued in some ways. But
I think they are, too. I think they're realizing just how radical and committed these members of the Revolutionary Guard are, the mullahs are. And the problem with these kinds of incursions is that we kill off all maybe the not so crazy guys, one or two levels, but who's going to survive in the Revolutionary Guard or in the mullahs? Who's going to survive that? Somebody who's really radical. That's the problem with taking out these layers of leadership in these foreign countries. Now they're just using drones. They're down to drones. And they're using drones to take out oil fields and pipelines. And so whoever survives our purge of the Revolutionary Guard and the Mullahs is going to be probably even worse than we can imagine.
Well, one of our guys,
and that's the lesson we learn every time we go into these foreign countries and think we can do it better this time, and we can't.
No,
we can't do it. We did it with Iran the first time around. We wanted Iran's oil, so the British and the Americans knocked out the
guy in 1954.
In the 50s, right?
Yeah,
and we
54.
Got the Shah. And we didn't like the Shah, so we knocked out the Shah and got the Mullahs. And now we don't like the current Mullahs, so we're going to take out a bunch of them, and then we're going to end up with some Mullahs even more radical.
In my lifetime, although I was an infant, this is the third regime change in the same country engineered by us.
Yeah.
How scary is that?
It just doesn't work. We tried this in Afghanistan. We tried this in Syria. We were playing ball with Muammar Gaddafi.
Oh, yeah.
He was playing ball with us, and we took the guy out, and now we have an ungoverned region of Africa.
Yeah, we... But
I don't understand why we don't
learn. Well, a lot of it is a diversion.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look what we did.
Oh, there are people making money off this war. There are all kinds of people making money off this war.
Well, I mean, I understand where Osama bin Laden was.
Yeah.
But if you were hanging around on some planet somewhere where they actually have people, if there is one, listening to the news here, after 9/11, you would say, let me get this straight. There were 17 Saudis and 3 Egyptians, and these morons invaded Afghanistan. Okay. Well, I guess some people might have been hanging around over there, but the Afghanis, there weren't any Afghanis, were there?
Well, you know, the Soviets, they got their butt kicked in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
You know, the Soviets, you know, they're not going to go in there all nice. They're going to try to knock things down, flatten it. And they got their butt kicked in Afghanistan. The British tried that.
If you were,
about
I'm going to say,
100 years in Afghanistan.
I'm going to say, if the 20-year-old Hal or the 15-year-old Hal walked into you probably could go into a bar in Idaho. Said, you see the Russian.
Well, the law changed when I was going to turn 18, or no, I was about ready to turn 19, and the drinking age back then was 19. And about 2 months before I turned 19, they changed the law because DC said, hey, increase your drinking age to 21 or you don't get any highway money.
Yep.
So my brother Ryan was grandfathered in. I wasn't. It probably led to my excessive partying once I hit 21.
Well, if you'd have walked in and stood on the bar and said, you see these Russians over here in this place called Afghanistan? Of course, nobody even knows where the hell Afghanistan is. That's going to be, and we were cheering. Because I remember my generation was cheering because they had their Vietnam. They were just as stupid as we were in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And they had their Vietnam. If you just stood up on
the
bar,
that's why you get young men to volunteer to.
But if you'd have, said,
the military, because
give us 20.
Give them an order, they'll go over that hill.
If you would have said, give us 20 years, and we're going to be the idiots in Afghanistan, and we're going to be getting our guys killed right and left and legs lopped off, they would have put you in a straitjacket and wheeled you off to the funny farm.
Yeah.
And yet,
although
there we were.
There is another side of this. I was listening to Steve, what was it, Wozniak, the advisor to the Middle East for the president. He was on the news a couple days ago, and I remember watching this, and he said, we went in to negotiate with the Mullahs, and the Mullahs are like, it is our right to develop a nuclear bomb. And I think they also said that they had enough uranium enriched for 12 bombs. And they weren't going to budge on it. I think we're seeing how crazy that regime is. They wanted nuclear
I don't know that they wanted.
I'm
not going to take their side, but nobody on this side. This is another weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, yeah.
The uranium.
But, you know, Steve, he did negotiate all these Abraham Accords in the first Trump administration, and he's building that coalition now.
Anybody who is affiliated with Trump, I don't believe a word they say.
Well, yeah, it's hard to believe what anybody says.
Yeah.
I mean, trust in the news media is probably worse than trust in Congress.
Well, but I'm talking about the regular people. We'll just flat out lie to you. I mean,
the news media,
they,
whether it's left or right, news media is lying to us. The government's
lying to us. You're a nuclear.
Everybody's lying to us.
You're a nuclear guy.
Yeah.
They are going to say. If on the Iranian side, and by the way, I don't trust those guys. they're going to say, you can't stop us from doing nuclear enrichment for peacetime purposes. That's their side of the story. On our side, we're going to say...
I think Steve was saying it was even worse than that. They were saying, we're going to enrich for a bomb. That's what they're saying.
That's
negotiations.
Okay, I'm saying that would be his...
And they couldn't talk him down from that, Cliff.
Okay, that would be his...
Apparently.
Apparently. That's his side of the story.
I'm just saying what Steve said on the news.
Now, read Colin Powell, Weapons of Mass Destruction in Iraq.
I know, yeah.
I mean, so, you know, I don't know what's going on here. It seems like we're being led by the nose by Netanyahu. I don't know. I wonder if there's going to be a special place.
Well, there's a lot of people on X that are saying all the videos, recent videos of him are AI generated.
A lot
of people on X don't think that Netanyahu survived something.
Oh, well, yeah, boy, I don't.
That's going around on X. I'm not sure what's going on. You got these deepfakes and AI videos.
It's very hard to. But I know a lot of people are making a lot of dough on this. But even look at the stuff that we put up with in this country. Somebody was telling me the other day they finally went and got their real ID.
Yeah.
Now that's been something that people have been fighting about since.
Well, yeah, the real ID, the law actually came out 25 years ago, and they're now enforcing it.
Well,
in order to fly, you have to have a real ID.
You know how many,
or a passport.
This all goes back to 9/11.
Yeah.
Now, you know how many people, any one of the 20 people.
Yeah, 9/11. The politicians were able to spin some pretty good yarns, right?
Well, you know how many people that were involved in the bombings used their driver's license to get into this country?
Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
They all had passports.
Well, I mean, all they had to do after 9/11 was make sure that the cockpit door was shut and maybe reinforce it with some kind of, you know, armor. And that's it. That's all they had to do. But they had to institute rules and regulations where I'm in Chicago, I buy a Chicago-style pizza, I want to take it home to my wife, and I can't get it through security, so now I got to eat the thing. Now I'm plugged up, constipated on the plane, and I shouldn't have ate the pizza. I mean, come on. We don't need all this. I don't think we need all the security that we have at these airports.
Then
on top of that, the people doing the inspections are all government employees, and every 6 months the government shuts down, and we have nobody able to do these inspections, which I think are ridiculous. And then we have these delays. In Canada, airport security is privately done.
In the United States, it's
done by federal employees.
Do you have any idea how hard it is to peel back a piece of security?
Oh, I know. Yeah. Once something starts, you can't peel it back.
Well, remember the story of there was a giant, this has to go back, goes how many far years ago, it goes back. There was an opening day game at Dodger Stadium, and some giant fans were there, and these people got in a fight, and somebody ended up croaking. And the lawsuit was against the Dodgers, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the biggest part of the lawsuit was that the Dodgers had decided they had too many people in security and had laid off, I don't know, 2 guys, 10 guys from the previous year. So the essence of the lawsuit was you guys cut back on security, and if you didn't, this wouldn't have happened. And I think...
Yeah, I think drunk people at a baseball game are going to get in a fight.
Okay, but I'm saying that's... Try and cut back on that. I mean, I was on the board of the SIBO, and we had a lot of security-type, you know, closed-door sections, especially if the people who are giving you the presentation are the people you're hiring for the security. Nobody wants to vote to... No, we don't need security at this entrance at that much. You know, you guys... You know, cover the front entrance. You're not covering all the, but try and do that, because the responsibility is on you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a tough thing to do. But I'm saying, this real ID. All those guys came in with a passport, so you need a passport to get the real ID. It's like, or you need your address and your utility bill.
Well, I got my real ID in New York without a passport. I just took in like 2 forms of ID, like my. What Social Security card,
that's
my
not,
previous
that's not
driver's
an
license, and a birth certificate.
Well, okay, you need a couple of picture IDs.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it for me, and I did it a while ago, is that the letter they send you at your house saying you need a new driver's license, that becomes a legitimate ID because they sent it to you at your house. So that was one of them. Then I had a utility bill. Then I had something else. But, so, you know, I had all kinds of stuff. But if you don't have that, but the point being is why? It's like nobody. I can remember walking on a plane without any security whatsoever. But the thing you're talking about 9/11, one of the issues there, the pilots had specific directions for years that if hijackers were on the plane, you do whatever they tell you to do. If TWA is going to get hijacked to Cuba, you land in Cuba. You let the guys off and you fly home. They didn't want anybody to give any sort of resistance. Now, if they were to turn around and said, by the way, we got a new group of guys, and if these guys want to take over your plane, you don't let them. That's a different
brand of ball. Yeah, I think post-9/11, the lesson learned would be to have an armored door, an armored cockpit, and then just keep it locked.
Well, the lesson could also be you got 200 people. They had box cutters. Hey, these guys are no good. Jump them.
Yeah.
Or take the...
Well, that's what apparently happened on that plane over Pennsylvania, right?
Because they knew the other ones had already crashed.
Yeah.
That's why they resisted.
Well, they knew they were dead, and they're just going to protect...
Well, okay, but they knew the other ones had already happened because somebody had a cell phone.
They already crashed,
So, but if... I mean, you got a lot of weapons on there. You got coffee pots with hot water in them. You got all kinds of stuff. 200 people can do against four.
My brother Todd in his 30s, you punch him, and he's like a bear. He's going to get angry. And you could... I mean, you ever seen those scenes where you're shooting the bear?
Yeah, but I'll take my chances five guys against one in a narrow confinement.
Yeah, I know. If you got a guy like Todd, my brother, my oldest brother, where pain is just, he just laughs it off.
Yeah.
And there's some guys that are like that, right? And you plug him, he's just going to get madder and madder and madder and tear your head off. I mean, that's just how Todd was. I'd never wanted to fight him, man. He had no pain threshold.
Well, now that I have you, Mr. Professor, we talked about everything else. We've got a government that is asking for help for other people. We're insulting the living crap out of everybody who's loaning us money. And now we're running through $1 trillion every 100 days.
Yeah, I don't know.
You've been watching the money supply. We're not going to raise taxes, even though I think we, I don't want to say should. I think it's a done deal. Somebody's going to have to do it. Where are these guys going to get this dough? Are they going to have trouble borrowing it? Are they just going to print it? If they do, how do they avoid not having a 10-year rate of 8% 6 months from now? I mean, what are we going to do here? I guess is the question. How are we going to balance these books? And if this thing drags on, what are we spending a day, for God's sake?
Well, I think you have to know the lessons of history. I think they're going to continue to print money. I don't think they're going to raise taxes. Republicans won't let them raise taxes. I don't want any tax to be raised. I think what they need
I don't
to do
either,
is
but
starve the freaking beast. But they're not going to starve the beast. We're going to just continue what we're doing. And, you know, this kind of stuff has ended nations. It gets to the point where the nation just fails. And I'm sorry to say it, but I've been thinking at this for probably 20 years. At some point, this experiment ends. I mean, you see California wanting to break up. You see Eastern Oregon wanting to separate from Western Oregon. You see rural parts of Illinois want to separate from Chicago. Everybody wants a divorce. And if the government doesn't get this under control, and we keep spending money like this, then people who don't like this kind of stuff, living in certain parts of the country, and you're seeing concentrations of Republicans moving to certain states and concentrations of Democrats remaining in other states. So the states are getting more and more segregated politically over time. And the Republicans and Democrats are fighting for who's going to control the nation. The Democrats don't like Republicans control the nation, and Republicans don't like the Democrats control the nation. So if we can't start starving the beast of all this government largesse, then it's going to get out of control, and it's going to splinter the nation. You know, I don't want it, but that's just what history tells us.
Well, you also have an awful lot of people being led by ridiculous places like Newsmax and maybe some of the left wing stuff.
Hey, the news media on the left and the news media on the right are equally culpable in this.
Well,
Tom,
I'm saying
it's not just Newsmax.
There's a reason
why CNN and MSNBC have approval ratings below Congress.
I I just said
it's on both sides. You can't just point to one side.
I could have said
I don't even watch the news anymore, Tom. I don't even watch it.
I talk to people
because I know it's just
I talk to people who I talk to people who listen to only one side or the other.
Yeah,
and it's absolutely scary. They're absolutely
progressives in New York listening to only MSNBC, well, MS Now, and CNN, and then you got conservatives only listening to Fox News and Newsmax.
And
that can't be good.
It's not good.
But we're siloed in our news media, and we're siloed on X.
But I
can't even go on X anymore.
But if you do,
it's gotten to the point where I can't even go on there.
If you do what I do and constantly try and dig the numbers out yourself, you find out that both sides are equally. But the fact is, the nobody is doing it themselves. Nobody, you can't even mention the other side, because if you listen to stuff from both. There's going to be some stuff in what everybody says that is sort of the truth, and it actually matches up on both. So you can get your little filters of the truth if you try hard enough. But
they want their viewpoints.
But everybody, if you're on the Republican, not the Republican side, I'm saying it's the far right side. All these other people are draining money from you. Yet on the far left side. It's all the rich people stealing money from them. And you know what? Most of the money, I think, is being taken by some of the... If you look at welfare is not only for the poor, you look at
the part of
the Medicare and those kinds of things, you're not getting...
The poor get a very small slice of that subsidy pie.
You're not going to have... maybe it doesn't happen so much anymore. Rich people live longer, right? So they're going to get more out of Social Security, right? And
there's not a Social Security that they're getting. Well,
they're getting Social Security.
They're benefiting from all this corporate subsidy.
Well, I'm saying just the simple. I'm just trying to be the simple stuff. Yeah. You're going to find if you find a guy who's 75 that's on his second hip and second knee replacement and a full heart bypass. It's probably somebody who's got money, because if you're not living that long coming out of the hood. So welfare is on every level. If you define welfare as getting something you didn't pay for, you'll find that welfare is all over the place. It's not just the guy getting the food stamp check, right?
Yeah, I mean it's a problem. And
but nobody thinks everybody thinks the part they're getting.
The change the parameters of the Federal Reserve. That's what.
Well, I mean,
and then we gotta enforce the debt ceiling. It's not a debt ceiling if they raise it every six months.
What you're saying is that you're actually going to have to tax people more.
I'm not saying that. Well, I'm saying let's spend a lot less money.
But look at what you have in terms of income to the government. Now, I say it every day. I don't want to pay another dime. But you see what happened in California? They want to have a wealth tax. Right, no, I don't want a wealth tax.
Yeah, Washington State it's actually against the Constitution of the state of Washington. They're calling it a millionaire's tax, and just the talk of a millionaire's tax caused the CEO, founder of Starbucks, to move to Florida.
Okay,
and his wife.
But those guys are idiots that do that. But what I'm saying is, what would cause somebody to say that? Why would anybody want a wealth tax? Well, because the wealthy people have gotten to a point where they never get taxed.
Yeah, well, even if you institute that tax, they're not going to pay it.
Okay.
So they're going to have to extend it down into the middle class. That's how these taxes work.
I said I don't want one. But I'm saying it's the same principle. There's a guy who said, why do you rob a bank? Because that's where the money is. You and I think, agree.
but they're not going to get the money from these wealthy
people. Okay. It's...
So when they don't get the money from the wealthy people, they're going to have to extend these rates down into the middle class.
Okay.
That's what happens.
Okay, but I'm saying the middle
class... That's what's happening in New York City.
As the Irish once said, you can't get blood out of a turnip. There's only so much that the guy making 60 grand a year and is paying taxes out the ass everywhere on every level and can't even afford to live, there's only so much you can take out of that guy. But now if you look at somebody, say the lady who... I don't know her tax situation, but I think I do. If you happen to have if Grandpa Carl bought 10,000 shares of IBM at $5 when he was 2 years old, and now it's whatever the hell it is, it's $250. nobody ever pays tax on that. No, capital gains, I would adjust it with all kinds of things. The wealth is not taxed. So there's only so much you can steal out of Carl's, not Carl, Hal's paycheck from the university. But now Grandpa Hal, if he croaks and gives it to you, nobody ever pays for that. That's where the wealth is. That's where the money is. It's in asset appreciation. It's because of what the Fed has done. I mean, but what you talk about all the time, that the Fed has put too much money in the system, and you want to stop that. And by the way, I agree with you 100%, even though it's hard to agree with you. But I agree with you 100%. But now, what has that happened? What has that caused? It's caused that, I'm going to say 80% of the wealth increase in the last 20 years in this country has been in asset appreciation. That's where the wealth is. And most of it is not taxed.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's a problem. Because if you're running a shortfall like the government is, and you say, okay, if I want to tax...
It's more than a shortfall.
It's a large fall. If I want to tax more, can I really... by the way, one of the producers of the show, we'll go nameless, got a job with... God, what's the name of the place? Not Hughes Broadcasting. Somebody. His first paycheck was $45, right?
Oh, man.
Guess what they took in taxes? $45.
$45. Wow.
The whole amount. He says to me, "Chief, how the hell could that happen?" I go, "My brother is more about taxes than me, but I can't. I don't see how the hell it ever gets to 100%. His check was zero.
If I was in Congress, I would vote against every debt ceiling increase. Because it's not.
I'm with you, but they just raised. Okay, but my point
and
is,
and then I'd vote to change the Fed's mandate. All
right, but you
throw him to it. 2%
right,
a year.
I'm saying all I'm trying to inject here is I agree with you 100%. The money supply has grown too fast for 25 years. Yeah. Okay, and so what has it caused? It's caused this wealth bubble. And by the
gold
way,
prices, Bitcoin,
silver, and now we have a government that's broke. Now they're spending too much money. I get it, but if they're in on the income side, they're not getting any of that dough. The big wealth. So if you and I go from, $100,000 a year to $200,000 a year, we're kicking over 39% to these guys. Where if our IBM goes from 100,000 to 5 million, and I croak, I'm not kicking them anything. Well, that can't be, Al. If you want any kind of fairness, can you?
Well, yeah, I would vote for either a VAT. Eliminate all of the taxes, a VAT or a transaction tax, a small rate on all transactions, and then I would never raise the debt ceiling.
All right, so how does it?
And then the Fed would have to grow.
How does a value-added tax even remotely talk about asset appreciation?
That's what I'd be in favor of. That's what I'd run on. Okay, I'd run on.
So you're saying you still don't want...
If that is successful, then we can't finance any of these...
Okay, you're still not going to tax the person who's got $5 billion worth of asset appreciation, because the VAT doesn't...
Well, I know, but... That asset appreciation won't happen if the Fed is not irresponsibly growing the money supply.
My point is, it already has.
I know it has. Yeah.
Remember the movie The Natural? I wouldn't bet against me. You're missing the point, son. I already have.
Yeah, but see, all that stuff in the past is kind of like sunk.
No, it's not.
It's kind of sunk. It's okay, just been decided.
So the lady whose old man croaked at Las Vegas Sands, all of a sudden she's got billions of dollars. Because he croaks, she never has to pay tax on it. She can just go spend the billions, and it's okay.
Those are the rules. We got to change the rules of the game, and the rules of the game need to change.
Right, but right now you're saying...
Cap the growth rate of the Fed, no more raising the debt ceiling, and then get rid of all these federal taxes except a VAT,
if you never tax these people, you're going to end up with the plutocracy we're going towards. You're going to end up
I'll tell you, if you have a transaction tax... You're going to get taxes on the wealthy people. If you have a tax on every transaction, you are going to tax those wealthy people.
All right. Hell, you got to listen to me a little bit, please. If that guy didn't do a transaction until he died, he never did a transaction on his appreciating assets. Where's the transaction? There never was one.
Every day of his life, he's doing transactions.
And that's
buying boats. He's buying houses. He's buying stocks. He's buying. He's selling this. He's buying this. Every transaction, not final transactions. Every transaction.
So you're saying any kind of asset appreciation, we just let go?
No. Where money exchanges, where a good service and money are
exchanged. But the damage like is small transaction the damage checks. Is done. 1% of the people have what? How much percent of the assets?
Dude, well, all I'm saying is, Mark Cuban is going to have a lot more transactions than me. Everybody pays the same rate on every transaction.
I don't. Think
every transaction.
You think that
final, intermediate, or beginning?
You think that Mark Cuban and his family cycle. Have that many more transactions at the food store than you do with the triplets? I'm saying no.
No, he's buying stuff. He's buying NBA properties, selling NBA properties. Every transaction.
I guarantee you, we're not talking
every
about
every transaction.
Well, whatever. We got a dash, but.
Make it easy.
We got a dash, bud.
Make it without filing a return.
I'm with you on changing the rules, but I think we've...
those three things will save the nation. Those three.
No, they won't.
If we don't
we're too
do
far down
any
the road.
Of those three, it's going
to
splinter.
You should ride to Seattle with my brother. He's in the same spot. Neither one of you are... You're both of you.
Have him join the show one day.
I love you both, but you're totally oblivious that the people who game the system this time are going to game the VAT system.
Well, it doesn't have to be a VAT. It would just be a transaction tax.
Okay,
on every
they'll
transaction.
Game, but it won't be. It'll be every transaction but this one. Mine doesn't get to count. That's the way it is. That's the way
we
the world is.
We've got to find the least bad system. I think
God.
That's the least bad system.
And a 10-year...
It's bad. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's maybe the least bad.
Oh, whatever.
What we have isn't working, Tom.
Okay, but the
and taxing wealth is not going
to change anything. If we change it, the 10-year changeover period is going to be a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm just saying what we've been doing.
Are you on break? Or are you going down and getting bed bugs? Or are you staying?
I'm going to Auburn, Alabama on Wednesday.
What's going on down there?
Present a paper.
All right. Yeah. Well, you said you're going to Auburn. I thought maybe it was an NCAA.
My
thing.
Last words of the morning. I'm gonna repeat a phrase that Anton Jackson said in court. What I've been doing ain't paying so good.
Well, you
what
go.
We've been doing ain't.
By
doing
the way, I think Alabama is one of the states with the bed bug problem. So be careful.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
SP Futures up 22. NASDAQ Futures up 68. We've turned positive here. Hopefully we stay positive after last week. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.